I'm Hillary.
And I'm Sandra. Coming up on the podcast, we're going to talk about rehabbing your shitty little marriage.
She called it a shabby marriage.
Oh,
but,
I'm sorry. I was taking liberties, but it's, yes, your shabby marriage. And she's written a book on it, and we're really excited to talk to her.
Now, Ashley's experience is unique because she actually ended up throwing her marriage into a bit of chaos before bringing it back to a place where it was better than ever before. We'll learn some of the lessons she learned along the way.
The Quick and the Dirty Podcast with Hillary Welch and Sandra Plagakis.
So Sandra, you know how when you break up with somebody, you have to figure out how you split your stuff, whether it's a long-term relationship or maybe you've been dating for a few months, your sweater might be at his place. That moment is super awkward, right?
That is the worst moment in the world where you start going through your stuff, deciding who gets what. Yeah.
Well, now there's an app that you can actually use to help you navigate this. It's called Post Dates. And I feel like this could have been really handy in your marriage if you didn't want to deal with your ex. You basically build an online shopping list of the things that you would like to get back. They negotiate with your ex, have the stuff shipped back to you, and you don't have to deal with anything. They charge you for shipping, they charge you for getting it, and they charge you for the emotional labor. But hey, it's worth it.
Are these gangsters? Like, is it Big Vinny who's going over to crack some kneecaps? Or are they, like, what's their skill set that they are able to go in? We're not talking about lawyers here.
No, I think they probably just call up your ex and say, hey, these are the things that Jessica would like to get back. She noted that she left her frying pan, her PlayStation, and this at your place. Are you okay if we come and retrieve this at an agreeable date? And I'm sure there's going to be some negotiation and probably some bitterness, but then they get to deal with that on the phone instead of you.
Right, they take the blow of the ugly words as opposed to you. Now, okay, I like it, but isn't that why you have lawyers to begin with?
Well, the lawyers are only useful if you've been married. What about
That's
a long-term dating situation?
That's true. Yeah, you're right. You know, you call it a day, you move out, and then you're like, oh, I forgot my favorite college sweater. Yes, I got to get it back, but I don't want to have to deal with that prick again.
Or so what they if come you're in out and they do when it. You have a big fight? Like, that's it. We're
right.
over. And then you're like,
yes.
Knock, knock, knock.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than that. So I love the idea, but here's my question. Let's say you and I break up, Hillary, and I'm like, Hillary has three things that I want. My team comes in and they try to negotiate with you, and then you say, I'm only going to give you back two of the three things. Do I get a discount on the app because I didn't get everything that I wanted? You know what I mean?
Well, you do pay per item, so maybe you don't have to pay for that particular item. I don't have all the details, Sandra. I just found the app.
No, I'm just saying, here's what I want to know. Like, how much force are they willing to use to get what I want back?
Like, I don't
do I
think
pay
a
extra?
Lot. You're not hiring
Do I pay extra?
Man.
But I know, I'm just, well, this is what I'm asking. Can I pay a little extra for a backhand?
I actually just think what? This is brilliant because in my 20s, I can remember having these situations where I'd break up with a boyfriend and then you go back over to their house to like fetch your things and pack a box or a bag because inevitably you were living there part time. And then during that, the crying starts again. You renegotiate the relationship or they try to get back with you and it's messy. And inevitably you end up sleeping together one last time because it's got to last until you find somebody else.
Right. And then you just feel like shit.
Total shit.
Why is it when that happens, the girl always feels like shit and the guy probably feels like, you know, he won something because he got her to have sex with him again?
Because guys don't have emotions, Sandra.
Oh, that's true. Yes. Thank you for clearing that up. As far as apps go, to avoid the shame of sleeping with your ex one last time, whatever it costs, give them the money.
Totally. Sandra, you wanted to give a shout out to some very special people.
Oh, yes, I totally did. I wanted, first of all, a couple of people, because people have been sliding into my DMs the last couple of weeks because they say that they just started listening to our podcast based on a recommendation from another podcast that they were listening to. If you listen to the Humble and Fred podcast, which is a daily podcast Monday to Friday, Freddie P actually gave me a shout out, and you actually a shout out on the June 7th issue. Yeah, he listened to a couple of our episodes and he enjoyed it, and he gave it a recommend. And I thought that was absolutely sweet. And just in case you don't know, I actually used to work on that radio show in the 90s in Toronto on CFNY. So them my boys. And I just really appreciate the love. It just moved me. And you know me, I don't have a lot of feelings left in me. So that was one. I was very touched by the gesture. So it was very sweet.
They've sparked one of the few feelings you have left. That's nice.
It does. And I love that we have some new listeners as a result of that. So thank you for checking us out. We really appreciate it. And we hope we live up to the recommendation.
Yeah. Welcome to The Quick and the Dirty.
Pretty excited to welcome our very first guest on the podcast that we actually found on TikTok. This is a Quick and the Dirty podcast. First, we're really excited to welcome Ashley Renard. Hello.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for finding me in the very crowded and busy house party / neighborhood that is TikTok.
Well, yeah.
Sandra just loves that she finally slid into somebody else's DM.
Right? Right? You fell, Ashley, just so we're very clear, you fell somewhere between my recipe feed and my hot bearded biker feed. You sort of squished somewhere in the middle of there. And you kept coming up, actually, for some reason. I wasn't following you, but you were on my For You page. And I was very drawn to the messaging that you had because you speak common sense is what you speak. And then I dug a little deeper and I realized that you wrote this book called Swing, A Memoir of Doing It All. And I thought that you were very, very interesting and so honest about your marriage, which, of course, is the most personal of things to talk about.
It certainly is. And it is the thing that drives me the most crazy, I think, about the way social media has morphed. You know, social media has evolved really, really quickly. And my marriage is perfect. Parenting is so easy. When I hear or see those images on social media, I just go, oh, crap. And so because I have worked with, I was a figure skating coach and choreographer for 23 years before I decided to focus on my writing. So I've worked with so many young women and their mothers that I know perfect marriage, parenting is heaven, is not the norm.
It's just a facade that everybody wants to put out there because they don't want to deal with the harder issues, for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think so many people believe that other people have it all figured out. And so they want to kind of fake it till they make it, you know, just think, all right, if I have a pretty enough Christmas card, if I curate my Instagram feed, then somehow I'm going to get to that promised land where life is simple and uncomplicated for me as well.
You know, what's funny is that anytime I see couples that post pictures of themselves constantly, I think of it as a cry for help.
You know, it's usually because they're like, let's make everybody think everything's okay because it's terrible.
Right?
Yes, I think so too. And honestly, I've had one of my most recent podcast interviews that I had, I was talking to the host and somehow Rachel Hollis's name came up. And I said, oh, you know, I tried to follow Rachel Hollis for a couple weeks, like a few years ago. And it just was like my internal alarms were going off. Like, oh, no, she's actually having a hard time. Like, but but the image she was putting out was so different than that, that I couldn't continue following her. Cause I was like, yeah, this is not aligning what she's saying is going on and what I can actually feel like, even just through her videos. And the host I was talking to was like, oh, I totally fell for it. And then when she and Dave announced their divorce, this person was really broken up about it. Like, you know, couldn't really reconcile what was really happening. And I think that's the case. We want to believe what we see. And it is really easy to think, oh, yes, they do have some secret sauce. They do have some magic formula that makes their marriage just like an eternal honeymoon. And their children are delightful and entertaining and well kept every day.
For sure. I couldn't follow Rachel Hollis because anybody who thinks they have all the answers for everybody else's life, can you imagine being married to that? Somebody who thinks they have all the answers?
Yeah. Yeah, it was just too
like living hell.
I can it seems like the recipe for a brilliant rom-com. I don't know why I'm thinking this, but I feel like I've actually seen the movie of the, you know, the relationship expert who has the behind the scenes shitty marriage and then, you know, then all of a sudden the world finds out it was a farce and then one of them starts becoming famous because they're living their authentic life finally. Am I on to something here? Was that her life?
I think you're on to something. And you know what? This makes me laugh because I just saw that Rachel Hollis's old assistant has written a book that's like loosely fiction. I think it's like categorized as fiction. So you can just say, oh, you know,
right. Based on true life activities.
Right. It's categorized as fiction. So she's not violating her NDA. And it's called My Life. My Life with the Mogul.
Oh, my God. Really?
Right? Yes. I mean.
Yeah. And her name is Machel Solis.
Exactly. Yeah. Machel Solis, the Mogul. I honestly can't really wait until even like these momfluencers' kids grow up and write books. Like, I just like, I get this sort of giddy vibration that's rising. Sort of like, when you're meditating, what is supposed to rise up, you know, up your spine? What's that? The Kundalini. Okay?
We're not there enlightened enough to know. Like, yeah, I'll be honest.
So I don't have Kundalini. I just have giddy anticipation. when the facades come crashing down, and it's not because I want anybody to be like, you know, standing there in their underwear. It's that so many people have really hooked into these images that are all around us. I mean, before you used to have like a reality show for your life to be put out in front of everyone. Now each of us has the capability right in our hands of curating our own reality show for the whole world every day.
Right.
And it's fascinating how easy it is to just pull off that perfect exterior. I mean, presets are pretty amazing for that. You know, your walls look whiter, your teeth look whiter. It looks like you have skylights throughout your house because of lighting. There are just so many things that we can use that, like, I mean, I'm a Libra and a former figure skater, so you have to grant me the requisite amount of narcissism. Like, I love pretty things. But
and your ass must be spectacular, Ashley, let's be honest.
Thank you. But like, okay, it's okay to like choose which selfie you want to use or which photo of you and your kids you want to use online. And yes, you're going to take probably 40 of them to get a good photo. But let's not pretend that we don't have the emotions that come with navigating these meat suits around planet Earth. Because I think that's the part that's missing in so many places. And with working with athletes, predominantly adolescent women, young women for so long, it is so easy for all of us to feel so alone. And that's what I want to show in my videos. Like I say, I rehabbed a shabby marriage. I want people to know right from the very beginning, oh yeah, it was not like all rainbows and butterflies. Like, marriage was shitty. Like, I secretly wanted a divorce for at least a decade. And even then, because of my appearance, you know, my my winning dice in the ovarian lottery, the geography of my birth. I have so many privileges that make it really easy to like look, make it look like everything is fine.
Of course.
That I just wanted to drop the curtain on some of that and just be that more real person, because I know some people don't even have a friend or someone they can confide in about the things that are really hard in their life right now.
You know what you and I have in common, Ashley? One very predominant thing. You and I were both in a shitty marriage for 10 years. You stayed in it and got happy, and I divorced mine.
You know what?
I mean, and you divorce, have two choices, right?
Divorce can be like the absolute best thing for everybody. It definitely can. It wasn't until I dug in and renegotiated my relationship with myself and really started giving myself some of the credit, some of the appreciation, some of the validation that I was looking for outside myself for years. Like, as you know, the hardworking little athlete, as the straight A student, as I was homeschooling my kids before pandemic. I was homeschooling on purpose.
You wanted like all the medals, but nobody was giving them to you.
Exactly. Or if I did get a medal, then I was like, oh shit, I still don't feel filled up. Like you can't, it doesn't matter how many accolades or how many followers or even how many book sales now I get. None of that, it sounds so cliche, but it's so true. I used to talk to my athletes about this. That they're like imaginary finish lines. Like I used to think, oh, when I get a team to nationals, I'm going to feel like a good coach. Oh, when I get a team on the podium at more competitions than when they're not on the podium, then I'm going to feel like a good coach. No, if we're looking outside ourselves, it's just a moving target constantly. So once I started filling myself up with like, okay, I'm getting super selfish. And I love the word selfish because it was a word that was used against me for so long in my life. That and bossy. And center of attention. Let's just throw out all three, the trifecta, okay? I'm bossy, I'm selfish, I want to be the center of attention. You know what? I'm bossy because I am a damn good coach. I can figure out, like, what someone's doing, how they could do it better, and I can communicate that really clearly to them. I also do not mind being in the spotlight, so I can help other people with their confidence. I coach writers now on how to build their platform online and connect with their readers. And I'm selfish because I figured out how to take care of myself and then get myself to a stable and strong enough and aligned enough place that then I could show up, have a conversation with my partner and say, hey, you know what? Maybe we're done here. Like maybe, you know, we each built businesses. We were very good, like business partners, like financial decisions were very mature. We have three beautiful, healthy children who seem like they're going to be semi-productive members of society. Like maybe this is as far as we could go. I don't want our kids, we have three boys, super sensitive, amazing kids. I don't want them to think that like our relationship is the gold standard, is like the bar that they want to set for themselves. Because like we have the bar set high everywhere in our lives, except our relationship. It's like in the freaking toilet. Like as far as our communication and our emotional intimacy, like seriously, we're at like a second grade level. So if we can't figure out how to do this, then we need to separate and tell the kids, listen, mommy and daddy were good at a whole lot of shit together, but we couldn't figure out that. So we don't want you to think that like that is how it should be done. We want you to like, no, we couldn't do that. It wasn't an ultimatum. I had given my husband so many ultimatums over the 10 years before this. This was like, I was honestly okay and a little excited about this maybe being the next step. In my book, I talk about how I played this game with myself where I would make myself do the thing I most judged other women for doing. And I thought, oh, maybe this is the next thing, just like leaving my marriage. You know, maybe this is it. And it was when I had that conversation with him, and I want to put in the disclaimer here, I don't think that you can fake this step. Like I was really genuinely ready that if this was the next step for all of us to grow and to expand in our lives, like I was ready for it. It truly was not like a last ditch effort to make him change. It wasn't. So when he actually started to shift after that conversation, I was a little like, oh no. I was kind of thinking like, am I going to get my own apartment? Like, what is this going to look like?
You were dreaming of Sandra. Sandra has this ongoing dream of a little pink house that no boys are allowed in.
So except my children, right? Yeah.
No, whatever. Maybe
are allowed in the little pink house. Yeah. Yes.
Well, her kids are a little bit older. So think about your kids and then think about them being even more complicated. No boys.
Yeah. No boys. I will meet you for coffee, child.
That's right. That's all they get. So, you know, at the end of the day, you were able to rehab a shabby marriage, but it takes two to rehab a shabby marriage. How do you go from being emotionally disconnected? 10 years is a long time to fall into some pretty shitty habits. How do you turn things around?
You know what, Sandra? I think that when I had that conversation with Manny, something clicked for him where, I mean, it takes two. It always takes two. But you got to start with the one. You got to start with you. For him, I think what clicked was his fear of being emotionally vulnerable was suddenly smaller than his fear of not having his family all together and in the shape that he wanted it to be in. And I think that was it. I think that was it. He was like, okay, I need to open up a little bit. He was raised in a traditional Greek family where, you know, his mom is super expressive, super emotional, and all of the men are just shut down, quiet, silent.
I'm aware. My father is Greek. I'm very aware, Ashley. Very,
okay.
Mutes until the booze comes out, maybe.
Until the booze comes out. That's what happens a lot. And that's what I say in my book. I realized really quickly to be a good wife in a Greek family, it was super complex. But to be a good husband, you had to bring home a paycheck and not be a drunk. That was it.
Right.
So I think what, and I think this happens in, excuse me. I think this happens in a lot of families that very early on, the conditioning begins very early on. And, you know, it's this way if, you know, you are female gender, it's this way if you're male gender, right? Like, you know, you're identified as that by your family. I think that what my husband really, what imprinted on him was emotions are for women to express, to have, to feel, and then, you know, the men around them will sort of like dance around to try to like not, like to try to not be hit by the emotions or try to like placate the woman. But there's no space for them to have feelings. And I think that, you know, my husband's never even expressed that to me in words, but I think that that's really where he came from. And even when I would ask for more affection or even like we went years without him even telling me he loved me or that I looked nice. When I would ask for more, it was like he thought, I think avoiding his own emotions and avoiding the emotions of women those two things were so exhausting that then being asked to like pull out some emotion to give more to a woman was really hard for him. This is a joke that is not funny, that I said growing up in a Greek household, he was trained to ignore the sound of a woman's voice.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yes. And growing up in a small Manitoba hometown, I was trained not to whine about things I didn't get. I was trained to just go out and do it myself. My mom ran a business. All my aunts ran businesses. Like, you know, there was that rural resourcefulness built into me. And also, figure skaters can't be whiners. I mean, like, when your body says no, when your muscles are screaming, when your head says, your mind says, I can't do this one more time, athletes keep going. Like, that is the thing that you learn when you're so little, to ignore all of those things. So that combination was like a perfect storm for us getting this far into our relationship with our emotional intimacy being like non-existent.
So how did you go from this like non-existence of emotional intimacy, and like how did you start turning the table?
Yeah, well, I had turned the table all the way, and I was like, I really, one of the things that I did, I kept hearing, so in the book, it's our failed venture into the swing lifestyle. Well, one of the ways I really failed was like I caught feelings really quickly. I totally fell in love with this other man, totally. Married man, totally in love with him. He was totally in love with me too. I mean, that's why we were terrible swingers, like couldn't keep things physical. When I broke things off with him and we stopped going to clubs and we just pulled out of that lifestyle completely, I kept hearing, you need someone who loves you better. You need someone who loves you better. Every damn day in meditation, okay? I would show up for meditation. I would sit down. That's all I would hear. And I was like, all right, do I get a boyfriend on the side again? Because that was complicated. Do I get a divorce? Do I do this? Silence for months and months and months. So I'm pretty pissed, but I still sit for meditation every day. And then one day I hear, you need someone who loves you better. And I was like, yeah, I heard you the first 100 times. Yeah, thanks, divine. And then what I heard was, and it's you. And I just cracked up laughing. And I was like, oh, well, if it's me, like I know how to do things myself. And I know how I could do this. And I just started writing myself love letters every day from my husband, from my kids, from a coworker who was being a pain in the ass, from people from my past who I had unresolved issues with, like not really situations where I should reach out and apologize, but like awkwardness that I wish maybe they had apologized or something. You know what I mean? So I started just writing myself these letters every day. And that's when after months of that, that's when I got to the point where I was just ready to like to walk and be like, okay, this is actually maybe the best thing I could do for my kids. Instead of leaving in spite of them, I was like, yes, maybe I should leave because of them so that they have the chance to have something better when they're adults.
So let me just get back to the swing for a second, because I realize that you were in the excerpt of your book anyway, you describe yourself as a really bad swinger.
Very bad.
The worst. Your swingers aren't supposed to fall in love. That's the first rule I think that you broke right there. But you and your husband did agree to become swingers, yes?
We agreed to go to clubs and then kind of just see what would happen, yes. But we were both interested in that. We were both on board with that, yes.
It sounds like you people swing because they just want to breathe some new life into a relationship to see what the possibilities are, almost like a last-ditch effort to evolve it somehow. And it obviously didn't work out for you. And how did you decide not to swing anymore?
It got so complicated so quickly. I think one of the hardest parts was when I was really falling for this other man named Brad in the book. And I saw that Manny didn't really seem to care. That was like, I was like a dagger right in the heart. And I was like, yeah, he really doesn't care about me like that. Okay. But we were dating another couple, and that is just as complicated as you would guess it is. So there were a lot of feelings involved and other people involved. So we stepped away, and I was just really depressed because I didn't feel like I could tell any of my friends what was going on and what was happening. I just felt so much shame for not being more grateful for my lovely looking life to begin with. I was like, what is wrong with me that I couldn't just be happy before? But then it was like entering the swing lifestyle, it was like we could suddenly see our marriage through a microscope and with an aerial view at the same time. So every little thing that we had swept under the rug, everything that we had said, oh yeah, that's okay, that wasn't, and had actually, you know, bred resentment, like all of that nastiness was so, all that ugliness was so apparent that I couldn't just go back to like being blissfully unaware and be like, yeah, our marriage is fine. You know what I mean? So I was like, okay, we need to exit this lifestyle. And also, how the hell do I stay in my life? So that's when I would just be in meditation every day and I would be so damn lonely. And after months and months, I mean, I call it the hallway. It's not even like a tunnel. It's like this dark, you know what, guys? Okay. So I was at this in this really, really scary Econolodge in Montreal once for a skating competition.
We've all been in that Econolodge, by the way.
You've all been there.
I feel like I have as well, yeah.
We've all been there. And I just felt like I was living in that hallway where, like, the electricity is going out and, like, the lights are buzzing and, like, flickering. And, like, there's no carpet. Like, there's not, like, the paint's peeling. I was, like, in that, like, horror hallway for so long. And I just wanted to, like, I just wanted to crawl up into a ball, like the fetal position. But I was like, oh, then I'm going to be here forever. Like, I just need to keep moving. And it just takes as long as it takes, which sucks. I wish I could just, like, you know, tap my heels together. But part of that loneliness and that time and just, like, just feeling so utterly alone and shameful was what planted the seed of me writing this book. Because I thought, you know what? Shame is telling me that I could never tell anybody in the world what my marriage is really like or the ways I figured out that it wasn't what I thought it was. And I thought, what if I take this story that I feel like is my deepest, darkest secret and no one would ever love me or have any respect for me? Like, I literally felt like I should be banished from planet Earth. What if I took this and I was like, shame, I'm actually going to make this into a story that I'm going to share with everybody who wants to read it. It was like my own sort of, it was my own rebellion against the way shame was trying to make me feel.
And so you... How were you able to repair your, I understand that you wrote a book and I understand that you were swinging and whatever, but how do you go from a couple who are bona fide shitty communicators into good communicators? Like, how do you just both totally find each other again and get on the same page and become excellent communicators? I would like to know that because I find that to be, that's great. That's a lot of couples just wish they could meet in the middle. But again, it takes two to be able to communicate with each other and both parties have to be on the same page.
And the work is so hard that sometimes it just seems easier to walk away.
Walking away is way easier. It is way easier. Definitely. I did the work by myself for years, even after we exited the swing lifestyle, when I was feeling like, beyond depressed, like it was really dark. I hint on the darkness a little bit in the book. I did the work on by myself, certain that my husband Manny would never do his work, certain, but that I was going to do my work anyway, because I was like, this love that I want, this validation is not coming from outside me, so I'm going to do it. And then I got myself to a place where I really was legitimately fine with walking away. Fine, like, little excited. And that's when the shift happened in him. I think when we really, really change ourselves, the people around us have to step up or they're going to fall away. They really are. And I was ready to just let him fall away. And he didn't want that to happen. But I was able to hold my boundaries. I got so much mouthier. I love the word mouthy too. Or my parents used to call me saucy because that's a Canadian term, right?
Yes.
in the moment, if he would ignore my words or my needs or like sort of like invalidate my feelings or something in the moment, I would be like, whoa, stop. I need to, and like literally like that, like hand up in the air, like everybody pause. And usually, you know, 1 to 3 children would also be in the room and would pause and like, look, like, this is what I said and this is how you reacted. And I want you to know that's not okay with me. Like, when I say I have a feeling or I need something, like, we are a family here. And one of the jobs of family members is to help the other people in the family feel safe and healthy. And I do not feel safe emotionally if I am speaking and I am being ignored. And all of you here, if you are speaking and you feel like you're being ignored, you need to call attention to that, because we do not do that in this family anymore. And it was a process of every day, and still it still happens. Like, you know, there are sometimes like little things about little things, like even the way Manny will put his hand on my shoulder or touch me in the kitchen. Like I was cutting at the cutting board and he came and I think he thought I looked sexy the way I was leaning over the counter. I'm cutting freaking vegetables, but okay, thank you. And he came and he sort of put his hands around my waist and like rubbed against me, but it kind of took me by surprise and tickled, you know, it's a sensitive area around your waist. And I had a knife in my hand. And I said, whoa, no, you can't touch me like that. And he was like, oh, okay, never mind. I'll never touch you. I was like, whoa, stop. Everybody listen up. When someone says to you, don't touch me that way, you are not allowed to act like a two-year-old who just got a lollipop taken away. You have to listen to the words that the other person is saying. Okay, like that's what we do in this house now. And it was just, I didn't care if he was like, you're too bossy, I'm leaving. That's fine. If he couldn't step up and really build this family culture that I wanted of consent, of emotional connection, of having words be heard, of all of us being allowed to figure out who we are as our real selves and be able to express that and have support for that in our family, then he could leave. Because right. Once I filled myself up, I was like, listen, the bar is not just too low with emotional intimacy. The bar is too low in the conversations we have with our kids. The bar is too low in what we just let slip by, like sort of like a boys will be boys thing, but like, you know, a 40-year-old man. No, like this is the way, like I was just able to hold the line much better for what I wanted because I wasn't afraid of losing anything anymore.
Ashley, I got to say this, and I don't want you to take this the wrong way at all, but yeah. When my marriage was going to shit, and it had been for, you know, a good decade, and I stayed in it because I wanted to keep the family unit together, I played the game like, I'm not getting this, I'm not getting this, I'm not getting this, but I never ever said, what aren't you getting? I was the vocal one who always said what I wasn't getting, and he never said once what he wasn't getting. He didn't acknowledge there was a problem. But here's where I don't want you to misunderstand. I'm hearing you do the exact same thing right now, saying that you weren't getting what you needed, whatever, and you expected him to step in, whatever. What wasn't he getting? Was he not able to express what he didn't need to?
Yeah. Okay. So such a good point. And I'm glad that you brought this up to clarify. So when I would say, stop, this isn't okay with me, I need this, it was always like, because this is what we do here. So what you need is important. What you need is important. Like, it was like, this isn't just for me so I can cut vegetables comfortably. This is for all of us to be able to communicate what we need and what is really not okay with us as far as our boundaries, even within this family, like the way we're treated by each other. So it was really modeling that for the kids and for him. When he was willing to show some of that vulnerability, he started, I think this is the thing that is the constant work and is hard, that when you open it up, that we're going to talk about our emotions and we are going to have our needs met here. Yeah. Sometimes they will ask for things that you don't want to give. What we do here, it sounds really silly, but it helps to set the tone, it helps to set the stage, is when we are not happy with something, we say, is the complaint department open? So he'll say that to me, or I'll say that to him, is the complaint department open? And it might be something about like the way the dishes were left in the sink, or it might be, listen, when you said this to me, yeah, that felt shitty. That felt really shitty. And him even telling me, you know, it's one of my favorite things when he'll say to me, that was kind of shitty what you did, because for so long he never even admitted that anything felt, I thought he only had two feelings, like hungry or tired, you know what I mean? So being able to hear that, like when he actually has a complaint about something I've done, or like something I've done or an action, or like a way I made him feel, to me, like, it's like my heart like expands and opens because it's only
it's like, oh my God, you had a feeling. It's such a big deal.
It is a big deal. And I mean, you know, I don't want to treat him like he's like a 7-year-old, but it is hard. It is hard in the conditioning we have, especially like the gender stereotype specific conditioning. So that is part of it. If you're going to really, and listen, because I was better, because I had completely renegotiated the relationship with myself, and this is an ongoing thing. This is an ongoing thing. Like, I can really get down on myself pretty quickly. Like, the shame spiral that happens, you know, just from like being a perfectionist for most of my life, like I can trip up and fall in that hole again. Like, definitely. I can pull myself out of it within a few hours now, though, instead of it being like days or weeks. Once I got to that, a more secure place with myself, and I was really giving myself all the love I needed, everything else was a bit of a bonus. I mean, not just a bit, it's like a huge bonus. It's really amazing to feel loved by other people. I was more resilient to him offering me criticism or offering me feedback on how he would like me to show up in the relationship.
Do you think that men and women internalize relationship conflict in a different way? I think, and this is just from my experience, I'm quite comfortable sharing my displeasure with my spouse. Only because if you are not happy or you have these strong feelings, you had a feeling, which means that that relationship has a sense of importance to you because you want to either develop it, change it, make it better. But I feel like for a lot of men, they see those feelings and those conflicts as a hassle, or they feel like they're being attacked in that way, but they don't see it as like a, if I didn't give a shit, I wouldn't bother fighting for it. Like, that's sort of how I feel those conflicts land in couples. Do you think that there's any validity in that?
This makes me laugh because, yes, 100%. And I have some really strong theories about this. Okay. And I'm going to like start in the middle and I'm going to work in both directions. Okay. So one of the relationship advice books that I picked up before I met Manny was called The Surrendered Single by Laura Doyle. She also wrote The Surrendered Wife. The advice that she has in there is advice, blanket advice that runs through so many relationship and self-help books that are predominantly purchased by and written for women. And that is, if you have a nice guy, and the way you can tell you have a nice guy is like, he's not a felon and he like doesn't hit you. If you have a nice guy,
Jesus,
those are the only qualifications, really.
No,
wow.
It's pretty, like, you should, it's
low standards.
Insane.
Let's just,
it's fucking insane. It's like, let's just, okay. If you have a nice guy, don't bother him by asking for things. Just be happy with what he gives. So if he has the child's pajamas on backwards, don't shame him by telling him they're on backwards. If he is ruining your expensive new nonstick pan by using a utensil on it that's going to damage it, don't you bother him. Just be grateful he's scrambling the egg.
Is it okay. 1950 and do I have to keep the kids quiet when he gets home from work? What the fuck?
What the fuck? So, hello. Why do we have a situation where men still have a problem understanding consent or sexual harassment? Why do we have a problem where teenage boys who have, you know, been educated in some of the most expensive private schools in this country don't know it's not okay to sexually assault a woman who is passed out? Why do we have this situation? Because we have created this situation. Okay, let's move backwards to boys will be boys, right? You'll be, you'll bump into things, yeah. you'll make a mess. Oh yeah, look at that. They're just being themselves. Even in Greek tradition, okay, in Greek old wives' tales, you can let a female baby cry, like a baby girl cry, and cry and cry and cry and cry, cry it out. But they say, oh, it's dangerous for a baby boy to cry because their testicles may get twisted. That's the old wives' tale. It's dangerous for them physically to cry. So you need to try to appease them. Okay, so let's just look at how this then goes in different directions. So when you say, when I say to my husband in my kitchen, oh, please don't poke me in the sides when I have a knife in my hand, it is no surprise that his gut instinct, his knee-jerk reaction is to feel offended that he was told what to do. So I think we have this whole society that has been set up to let men just sort of do their thing and then let women dance around them and make life easier for them in a million different ways. So then when we say, hey, dude, could you X, Y, Z, they do feel put out because they are not used to it.
Well, you're talking about the patriarchy, obviously, and
obviously.
It's nothing new. But the thing about the patriarchy is that more and more men are woke to the term and fundamentally understand what it means and why they act the way they act. And now they're starting to understand what it's like to be a woman who has grown up in the patriarchy. Sadly, there are still some men who don't get it, so fuck them. But for the ones that do, I mean, I've always appreciated a woke man. So it sounds like Manny is woke. And you know what? I don't mean this as a slight to anybody who is European, but yes, a lot of Europeans are brought up in a very old patriarchal traditional way. So a young boy to grow up in that and break free from that, kudos to you, because that's not an easy thing to do, because there's a lot of expectations with your father, especially on how their sons should behave.
Absolutely. Now I have to ask, when he gets his back up, do you ask him if his testicles are in a knot?
You know what? I should. But it's funny because his back does not go up very much anymore. It really doesn't, because we have, and this is the thing, this is the way, I mean, we really have shifted our relationship and our parenting to be a far more, I mean, some people would call it like feminist approach just because it's like equality. The way that, I mean, so many times we got ourselves in trouble because we were following traditional gender roles and norms. And when I decided I'm going to be me and I love me as me, even though every other day I forget that I love me and I need to sort of remind myself, I get to be me and you all get to be you. And so that means like you love these things that are, you know, really, really have variety in them. Like all of my kids are really, they're unique people, because we've allowed them to just be themselves, right? And then Manny gets to be that. So ever since I quit my job coaching skating, Manny has made all of the meals. And I say it's because you're half Greek woman, you know? If I am fussing over the kids and making their meals, he's going to feel like I'm not fussing enough. So he likes to fuss over all of us. And we've just like, we've allowed space to like loosen those traditional expectations as far as, you know, our gender roles. And every single time we have found, we've learned something new about ourselves and we've found greater connection and more joy. I mean, I'm starting to sound like a Hallmark freaking card, but we really have found more joy in our relationships with each other because we all have more freedom to be ourselves.
How has this been reflected through your family? Because I'm sure like you come from very traditional families. Have they noticed the change and have they commented? Like, have they made shitty remarks or are they pretty like accepting and loving seeing you guys kind of settle into your new normal?
Yes, such a good question. Okay, I came from a really progressive, very feminist family in Manitoba, where like my mom told me ever since I was little, like there's nothing that a man can do that a woman can't do. And I was like, oh, yes, I was born in the right century. I'm not going to have to worry about equality or women's rights. So, I was like the liberal kind of sheltered. I thought the world had progressed far further than it had. So when I met Manny, and realized that his family was concerned with topics of ethnicity and virginity, I honestly didn't know that that was a concern outside the Taliban. Like, I had no idea. I was very sheltered. So I was the first non-Orthodox woman to marry into his family. This is what has happened at first. And in my book, I talk about my relationship with my mother-in-law because it was really tricky. And Manny was the first man of his generation on both sides of the family to get married. All the other male cousins were single for another decade after we got married. And I was like, this isn't by accident. They have been groomed and raised to find a Greek virgin bride. And
good
really
luck with that.
where are you going to find that in the suburbs of Philadelphia? Like, are you going to go hang out at a middle school like a creep? Like, what you've set them up to look for doesn't even exist in Greece anymore. Okay.
Right. No, it doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist. Thank goodness. It doesn't exist. So, my mother-in-law really had a lot of fears about the way I didn't fit into their family. And I really thought that meant that she didn't think I deserved her son or her family's love. And that was really tricky because I'm a damn hard worker and I will try to earn anything. But that seemed like an impossible medal to receive, right? To be what they needed me to be. I thought, I can't be me and be what they want. It's impossible. When I got clear on the fact that, okay, I am going to be me, even if that means my husband walks out the door today. Well, I'm actually sort of hoping he walks out the door today because then I maybe will have more space to figure out who I am and, you know, be a better mom and like all of these things. But then, because it's not about like lifting up your children and being like, reach for your dreams, kiddos. It's like the best way for me to ensure that my kids are going to be themselves and have the courage to go for what they really believe in is to do it myself. So I was like, I just need to fully live so my kids have a chance. My mother-in-law.
Speaking of your kids,
yeah.
How do you feel about the fact that your kids will one day know that their parents were swingers for a brief period of time?
Yeah, my 12-year-old and my 14-year-old already know. Let me tell you this. So ever since they were little, like I could talk to them. I would say like, oh, when you grow up, if you get married, if you don't get married, if you have kids, if you don't have kids, if you marry a boy, if you marry a girl, that was every single conversation we've ever had. Okay. And we've had a lot of conversations as they got older about how different families have different rules. And, you know, whether like what foods people eat, what video games they're allowed to play. Like, we don't play any shooting games in my house, even though my kids freaking love their PlayStation and their Xbox. They play sports games. Okay. We've had all of these conversations about how different families make different choices and how quite often one family's choices will scare another family because that family really wants to have control over what their children do next in life. And if their child was gay or did this or did that or was trans, then, you know, that would be really, really frightening for that family because they do not have any comfort or trust around that situation. Okay. So like, this was the foundation always when my book cover. Okay. And they knew that there was sex in my book and they know that sex is like an awesome thing for grownups that like, you know, it's not for kids. I just said like, you know what, if my laptop's ever open, I will try to close my book most of the time when I'm working on it. But if it's open, like, don't go and read it because there are going to be things that aren't going to make sense to you at your age. And like, you know, we'll talk about them later. So when my book cover was being designed, I actually had my book cover designed by Chris Ann Donnelly, who is a Canadian tarot card designer. She did the Lightseer's deck and the Muse tarot. Mm-hmm. And one of the options for my book cover was like sort of like a swing era, like with like a, almost like a poodle skirt and like this poofy, like bouffant hairdo. Like my hair is crazy on the cover of my real book, but this was like, you know, like I had this poof on the top of my head and all of these things that didn't fit the book, but it was like one of the concepts. And I showed my kids, they were in the car with me, Jack and Luke, they're 14 and 12. And they were like, what is this? And they were like, I was like, oh, it's just swing era. It's not like the swing. And they're like, wait, why is your book called Swing? Is what they said. And I said, listen, there's this thing called non-monogamy. And actually they knew what monogamy was before.
Right.
There's this thing called non-monogamy, consensual non-monogamy or ethical non-monogamy, where people decide that they're going to date more than one person at a time. And your dad and I thought that maybe we would be interested in dating other people while we were married. And we figured out really quickly that was super complicated, and we didn't want to do that, but it showed us things that we really wanted to work on in our marriage. And that was what helped us get to such a better place that we're in right now, because the kids went through that journey with us.
Of course they did. They were there and they saw their parents. They all have pretty good emotional IQs, and they see what's what. And so I'm just going to cut to the end now because we are very late on time right now for us. And ask you, Ashley, when did this book come out? Because I know you're talking about it a lot on TikTok, but when did the actual book come out?
It came out on May 25th.
Oh my God. So it's a fresh one.
It is a fresh one.
It's
a baby book.
It's a baby book.
It is selling incredibly well. It sold over 5,000 copies in its first week. 98% of books do not sell 5,000 copies in their lifetime.
That's great.
It's been on the top of some lists in Canada. I think it's still the number one new release in the marriage category on Amazon.ca.
You know, I think one of the reasons
that's back to everybody hates their spouse right now.
They really do. But you know what, Ashley? A big part of that, I think, is because of your social media presence and because I want to learn more. That's why you're here, is because I saw your TikTok and the things that you were saying about marriages and your authenticity. Those are the kinds of things that draw people to you. So it's easy to see why you would be a success. Now, I can get this book anywhere?
It's available everywhere books are sold. Yes. Chapters, Indigo, Amazon, your local bookshop. A lot of people are buying from their local indie booksellers, which is awesome because then you support small business as well.
That's amazing. I love that we're supporting a baby book right now.
It is.
And I know it's your baby, and I want to congratulate you on the book and its success, and it sounds like it's going to be really big. And I'm so glad I finally got to meet the person I've been stalking on TikTok. That makes me happy in a very weird, creepy way.
It is a delight. It is a delight. And that's what I love. When people see my videos and reach out through DM or anything, that's what I want, is for people to, you know, get some support, get some laughs, and realize they are not alone in this crazy attempt we are making at marriage and parenting.
Oh, thank you for everything.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
This episode is over, but the conversation doesn't have to be. Follow Hillary and Sandra on social. Instagram at Hillary on Air, at SandraKiss1053. Twitter at Hillary Welch, at SandraKiss1053. And on Facebook at Quick and Dirty Podcast. Got a question? Email Hillary and Sandra, thequickandthedirty@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can download the podcast each week to your mobile device to listen offline. Find The Quick and the Dirty on frequencypodcastnetwork.com, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts.